And our two special guests tonight, Paul and Ben Eno, as we talk about the other side, whatever that may be. Of course, Paul believes that it's just a continuation. So we'll be back with both of them in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Paul, before we get into some of the things you and Ben are learning about the years ahead, and they're pretty dramatic, I want to find out a little bit from Ben about his work with the Aztec shaman. Ben, how did this happen? What have you learned?
Well, actually, this correlates with the case that we've been working on for about 10 years. Well, it's a very, very long story. I'll just give you a brief portion of it.
The Cliff Notes version, huh?
Yeah, well, it would just take like the entire show.
I bet Ben doesn't even know what Cliff Notes are.
No, I know what Cliff Notes are.
You do?
He does.
They still have them?
Yeah, I use them for Macbeth.
So they still have them?
Yeah, they do, actually.
Cool. Okay, good.
Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah.
All right, good. Yep.
I used it for Macbeth, and that was a very boring book. Anyway, so basically, working with the Aztec shaman, it came about, 4 or 5 years ago when he moved in with this woman that we were working on a parasite case in her house.
Well, he married her. He didn't just move in with her.
Well, yeah, I know. Married her.
Well, some people just move in, Paul.
Like, I'm just going to move in. No, I mean, he married her, and he did basically in a couple of days what we couldn't do in like 10 years. So he basically pacified the parasite. That was a good.
He had claw marks all over his body after he did it.
And yeah, explain if you would, Ben or Paul, explain parasite. We're not talking about germs here. Or little things.
Well, in a way, cosmic
things.
Ones, I suppose.
Cosmic
well,
germs.
Well, Ben, if I may just get in here and just briefly explain that. In our folklore, we have evil spirits, demons, this sort of thing. This is how we understand the greater reality that we talk about when we mention parasites. These are not servants of the devil. They're not ghosts. They are beings of about 9 different species that I've kind of cataloged over the last 4 decades, most of whom are entirely physical, who are from parallel worlds, but somehow have access to ours. Simply to eat. I mean, life is everywhere, it's everywhere, and this is just a form of, it's part of nature. They come in and they seem to feed upon negative human energy. I can't put a scientific finger on that, but that's what they do. They also seem to be repelled by love, unity, and this sort of thing. So that's the method we use. Bring families together and this sort of thing, and that seems to take away most of their power. But I think the more I've studied them, the more... Well, they're different kinds, and the more dangerous they seem to be, one wonders about their influence not only in families and with individuals, but in the halls of government and in the larger scheme of things, which is something we'll get to as we talk. But that's essentially what a parasite is in our experience.
Okay. All right. Back to you, Ben, and the shaman.
So I was right after he just moved in, got the claw marks, blah, blah, blah. So I met him a couple months back. And, well, actually, it was more than a couple months, about exactly a year ago I met him, and my dad noticed that my meditation skills were really different, and I saw things when I meditated, different colors and all that, and all these weird symbols, blah, 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 meeting other people. So he took me to meet him and said, okay, this kid has special abilities, what do you think? So he looks at me and says, he's got it, and I was like, what? He's got it, and I was just like, oh, okay, I don't really know what that means. He was like, you're a shaman. So he gave me a bunch of stuff. And he was like, okay, go out there. So every couple of months, I go and see him, and we meditate, and something, like, drastic happens, like some life-changing event. And that is basically how I worked with him and how I, like, used most of my abilities and learned about them and put them into practice.
How did he get his abilities, Ben?
Well, he came over from Mexico when he was 13. And he came from a shamanic family. Like, they had, like, he's full-blooded Aztec. You cannot find that anywhere. What he's doing in Northern Rhode Island, I have no idea. But he's there for a reason. Like, everything has a reason. So he learned his abilities basically just through, well, he taught himself. So he wasn't really trained professionally by, like, another, like, shaman, like an elder or anything. He just sort of taught himself. That's basically how I went about, but he gave me some of his insight. He learned stuff from me and all that. That's basically how he learned what he learned.
Okay, now, Paul, earlier you said that you and Ben are aware of this uneasiness, what people might be feeling. Let's explain.
Okay, well, if I may, that'll take a little bit of background.
That's all right.
All right. And this involves communication with beings, people, whatever, of goodwill from other worlds. Okay, and I'm not talking other planets. I suppose you could say that, but that doesn't have a, in the multiverse, there are many different worlds in which we live. And we have, I compare it with, and this is an oversimplification, but I compare it with a large apartment building. And in this building are many, many apartments, in many of which dwell people who don't know there are other apartments. Right. And again, this is just a metaphor. And someone will you know, who doesn't know they're a neighbor, opens a door all of a sudden that he's not supposed to open, and there's a dog, aha, cryptid, you know, or something like a monster. Or he hears his brother moves in another apartment. His parents said, well, maybe he died, but then you hear him in next door in the other apartment. That sort of thing mm-hmm. Is how the multiverse seems to be organized. Well, in 1991, I encountered a little boy, the little boy Peter, whom Ben has mentioned. He was dying of leukemia, a very other-centered, wonderful, wonderful child. And from him, I first heard the terms high, well, he said high men and low men. I say high people and low people to be, I don't know, not sexist and inclusive. But keep those terms in mind, because that is the definition, one might say, of who is going to survive and who is not going to survive. In 1993... And let me just say, you have to be very careful of this sort of thing, because the first thing we do is question, you know, is this whatever we're communicating with, is this something that is really what it says it is, or is it a parasite that is pretending to be something else? And oddly enough, very few entities out there speak English, all right? And when you encounter a non-human entity in your meditation or whatever, if you're getting into multiverse living, and a lot of people are now, and you encounter an entity that doesn't feel right and still speaks English and is not human, you're probably dealing with a parasite. That's just a little trick. But in 1993, I got a call from some friends in New York State who said there was a tremendous, heavy footstep going on in their attic. You know, something was walking across. It wasn't all the time, of course, but at certain times of the day. And they said, well, can you come and check? They didn't feel threatened, but they wanted me to come and check it out, and I did. Ben was like 1 year old when this happened. Well, it turns out that in the attic of this house was an astounding presence. It was a masculine presence. It was a huge physical outline. And there was such nobility and goodness exuding, you know, from you know, like beaming off this creature. It was an honor to be in his presence. I couldn't identify what he was. But we were able to communicate. He spoke, and when I say spoke, I actually heard words in my ear. And it was a very odd and old form of Latin. And, of course, having been in seminary for I studied Latin for years and was able to more or less get through, I think. His use of the word invenio told me, instead of reperio, which is an odd way to put it, he was on a quest across the worlds, and he said worlds, plural. He was looking for a place called Renthusia, which I'd never heard of, never heard of it since. He and his people were harassed by what I would call parasites. He used the word, as I recall, or he pronounced it, Sagino. I knew the word as Sagina or Sagina in the classical pronunciation, which means essentially feeder. The feeders. He was referring to the feeders. And the feeders were after his people and had been known to destroy worlds or to prompt somehow the destruction of worlds. And this is before this. And once they had fed all they could on that species, they would destroy the world, the given world. And he was looking for Renthusia, which I think I have... Ben and I have found ourselves, and this is one of the first pieces of the puzzle, and this was a place where his people were going to escape to avoid the destruction of their world. And again, I cannot stress enough the goodness and nobility and the truth that this guy was a beacon of this. I don't know, I've never run into his species since, I don't think, but this was the message in 1993. Really got me thinking. In February and March of 1995, all of a sudden, Ben was like two,
right.
I felt the overwhelming presence of an ancestor who would suddenly just breeze into my home office, as Ben will tell you, it was in a converted chicken coop at our old place in Cumberland, Rhode Island, and I worked at home there, and Ben was with me all day as a routine. And the message was from this ancestor, and Ben would stare at the couch when this happened, as if he could see him, too. I don't know if you have any memory of that, Ben.
No.
But the message essentially was, get ready. Get ready for what? You know, but that was the message. In 2000, there was a different ancestor with the same thing going on. I mean, there were people would visit from different parts of the multiverse, and I was only just beginning to get comfortable with it. In 2004, there was a boy in Florida with an invisible friend. I was down there, and someone asked me to come and see him because they were concerned about this invisible friend, and, you know, was it evil or was it real or was the kid nuts or what?
Hence the video
you
sent.
Well, the boy,
right?
Whose name was Tony, it could predict all sorts of things about the future because of a companion nobody else could see here, and this is this invisible friend. I met him. He was a great outgoing kid. You would expect sometimes when someone's having this experience, they'd be, you know, introverted and, you know, didn't have any friends. This kid was into baseball, sports, lots of friends. Didn't fit the pattern of someone who was having a psychological problem. Not that I'm a doctor, I'm not. But he also didn't seem to have a paranormal problem as such either. To make a long story short, Tony made it clear that the boy's name was Tony, and this invisible friend's name was Tony, who was born exactly 100 years after the young boy of whom he was the invisible friend.
100 years after, yeah.
And he said that he lived in Florida, which in his world was part of a rather benign empire that included the entire east coast of North America all the way up to Labrador. You know, a very different parallel world. He made it clear to me that between 2012 and 2016, in his world, many people had died because what he called the eaters, got tired of us, and the people themselves, some of them anyway, moved to another place. And the eaters themselves moved because they'd had enough of that world, and apparently it was destroyed or whatever, and it was not good. And before that, Tony said that his family and others had gone through a door to another place where it was safe, and the eaters couldn't go. This is what he said. Now, none of that made too much sense then, but it certainly does now. Now, by 2000, frequent contacts, either through meditation, dreams, or waking contact, because this was going on with me, and I've never said this on the air before because I don't want people to think I'm a fruitcake, but this is just as real as I've ever experienced anything. The message was, get ready. And from the day Ben was born, something was very special about him. People would comment on it. And it became clear to me, as I say, I took that lecture tour of California those 2 years. People were, as you say, getting antsy about something. They knew something was in the wind, and people were getting nervous. Now, in 2005, it became clear after I started working with Ben, who has these tremendous gifts and really filled in the blanks, I think, after he started especially working with the shaman he's working with, it quickly became clear that he had an easier time communicating than I was, although he was communicating with different people and different things. Ben grew up in the multiverse. He was very aware of this kind of concept, and he was very comfortable with it, and it was natural to him from the day one, whereas I kind of had to learn it, and he connected with the shaman. What really was the turning point for both of us in this communication, in this quest to find out what's going to happen, was this case in Connecticut that I've mentioned before, and we're not the only people who are in on this, because this is where it starts to get real negative and kind of dangerous even. This case started in 2005 and was essentially a family having trouble with ghosts and weird things happening. And it turned out that the place is sort of a Grand Central Station of the multiverse. All kinds of people, species passing through. Nothing negative, though. This is the place where the people would see the legs dangling from the ceiling with somebody walking as if on a surface that wasn't there in our world. And it began to become apparent that there was a geographical triangle at work here, of which this house was one point. Now, Ben and I, and this is just last year, Ben and I triangulated this with an area that was reported to have some sort of military activity going on. And we were put onto that by UFO sightings. People all over the town would stop, pull off in their cars, and look into the sky and see these UFOs. We ourselves saw strange lights in the sky there. And we eventually went to the area where people were seeing troops. And we got the strong impression, and we did this on camera because we were doing the pilot for this TV show we're supposed to be developing.
Were the troops there for the sightings?
As far as our understanding was, that they were there to keep people out of this particular location.
All right.
Ben and I walked up to a windowless building that had a large antenna. And, Ben, I don't know how far you want to go with this. Do you want to tell them what happened then?
To be honest, most of the entire excursion was pretty fuzzy, but from what I do remember, when we walked up this dirt path, it had a wire running from the barn to this, looked like a microwave antenna, and there was a windowless building with like a large vent on top of it, and there was a barbed wire fence around it, so there was really no way of getting into it, and there was no door into the building, and then all of a sudden I just... From what I remember, I felt something pull me towards it, and then I fell to the ground, and the producer and the director were like, is he all right? My dad was like, just don't touch him. That's all you have to do. Just do not touch him.
Yeah, I knew the routine by this time, the shamanic.
Oh, this was happening. Like, okay, he was going into some kind of a trance or something?
Trance.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And the ultimate conclusion was that there was a portal in this building that somebody, you know, the government or somebody was aware of and was trying to work with. And there's more to it, but I guess we're kind of short of time. But we triangulated the third point of this triangle, and we went to that spot, and that's where things really got interesting. I don't know if you want to get into that, Ben. But
where was that spot?
Yeah,
go ahead.
I think it's time. Well, we went down to a swampy area. Ben was I just followed him. He was drawn to this, and he immediately.
No, let me just describe it. Because
yeah, you
you're
do
not
it.
Me.
No.
Okay, so basically when we got out of the car, we walked down and my dad was off checking some other things, and there was this perfect circle of stones and a larger stone in the middle, and something was just like, you should totally touch that. And I was like, okay. And let me make this clear. I do not hear voices. I feel it in my head.
Okay.
There's a big difference between feeling and hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So I touched it, and then all of a sudden it was like, you should totally walk over to that tree over there. And I was just like, all right. So then I was like half in myself and half not, and I stumbled over to the tree. I'm pretty sure my dad was staring at me like, what? And then the camera was on me, and then I laid my hand up against this tree to like rest because I was just like, what am I doing? So then I touched it. All of a sudden, bam, big white light, and I don't even remember feeling flat and like sinking, and I saw this big stone face come out of this light, and I saw it. It's like being everything and hearing everything, seeing everything all at the same time. And this stone face was like, are you ready? And I was just like, yeah. And it was just like, okay. So then it came inside of me, and I just felt everything. Next thing I knew, I woke up and I was on my back in the mud, and I was just like, what?
And you were watching all this, Paul?
Yes. Again, I kind of knew the routine by this time. I felt it was too much energy, so I stood over him and tried to draw some of it off. Now, again, I'm not a shaman, but, you know, I can do a few things. And when he came out of it, you shouldn't touch a shaman when they're in this position, because you can get nauseous and throw up, and there are all sorts of physical things that can happen. But when I saw it was over, I picked him up, and the producer and the director had their jaws open by this time. But I picked him up, and we walked out, and he believes he was given something that whoever these people were looking for, but they were looking for it in the wrong place.
What was he given?
I don't know if he wants to say that or not. But
well, I don't really know, to be honest. To be completely honest, I still have no idea to this day. But whatever it was, it felt nice. I mean, except for the fact that I was, like, shaking.
You changed on that day.
Yeah.
There was a power in you that's still there, and I've never seen anything like it.
Paul, when we come back, I want to ask you specifically what you've learned about the future, because that has a major bearing on where we're headed tonight. Our guest, Paul and Ben Eno, will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. For less than 25 cents a day, you can be a Coast Insider and get podcast downloads and all kinds of other fun benefits. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com. And, you know, we're doing video chats, too, so you get to participate in that. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. But let's find out, what do they see in the future? That'll be next. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Paul, let's let you give us kind of a review about this little future that that Ben was able to see, and then we'll get into what may be going on in the future.
Okay, well, the gist of it is that Ben is learning to move portals, and portals, of course, being doors between these worlds. Now, the question arose to me, well, why do you need portals if you're already there in another life, you know, part of your life or anything else? But there seems to be a deeper reason for that. But this is what we seem to be doing in Connecticut. And apparently someone else is onto this, too, and is trying to do the same thing. I'll tell you, in a nutshell, what I foresee, and Ben may disagree, is an interdimensional war. And I'll go a little deeper into that. As this
first-time
wonderful guy told me in this attic, and as others seem to be indicating, when a world has been used as much as it can by these parasites, as we've described, or eaters or feeders, whatever the species happens to call them, the world is either prompted to end or maybe not, doesn't always end, but there's serious danger that it will, and they move on. I think this time there's going to be a fight. And that's because one of the things I've gotten from these communications with these entities is that we share the enemy. These parasites feed, and I've seen this happening in many cases, where they feed on us through our negative emotions, but they'll also feed on whoever happens to be near neighbors in parallel worlds. It's almost like an octopus. They can, like, reach into several worlds at a time just to feed. This is the nature of their species. And there have been cases, and one in Pennsylvania, and I remember that there were people were bothered by what they thought were ghosts. I thought they were people just sharing the same space in parallel worlds. They were suffering from the same parasite. So that's the sort of thing. And I think there's going to be a fight. I think at the same time, there's an indication to me that there is going to be a self-inflicted disaster on the planet sometime before 2016, which I think is going to be nuclear. And I don't mean leaking power plants either.
A war.
Yeah. Or at least use of nuclear weapons. But I think the war is actually going to be between these parasites. Well, this sounds completely nuts even to me.
But is this what people are feeling, Paul?
I think this is exactly what people are feeling. And we feel it because, you know, our lives are big, and we're feeling that it's happening, it's going to happen. And I think that's it. And the notion of what Ben and I are supposed to be doing in this, and probably a lot of other people too. I mean, we're not, you know, the only people working on this here. The reason that we're, or at least especially Ben, is being prepared, and I don't even think I'm going to be here for the worst of it, is because of a place that I call the good world. And I encountered that in 2009 for the first time in a dream. And I think it's the Renthusia that my friend was talking about. It matches the whole notion of a place to escape to. And I think that through the shamanic abilities of Ben and others, portals will be opened for the high people to escape from the disaster and to be preserved, or the species preserved or whatever, in this, what I call this good world, which is a place that is very, very sparsely inhabited. It is a place where my family and I are, you know, live in a house on a mountainside and have visits and meetings with various people who are involved in this, if you want to call it a project. It's a rather different kind of place. And lest you think I'm totally nuts by now, I'll give you some examples of how other people are experiencing the same thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now I started having a good world experiences while awake. And then all of a sudden, Ben reported being there, too. Now, he doesn't remember a lot, but then other people reported going there as well. One was the wife of the shaman Ben works with, and I had told her nothing about this. But one day, she started describing a meeting under a trellis at a particular spot in the grounds where people often meet to discuss what we do here when the parasites have had enough of us and the world suffers and people have to escape. And I have had several letters. There are a number of people who are in touch with us, who one of whom may call in during the call-in time, to report that they're people who are interested in shamanic abilities and have also had experiences of the good world. A lot of people seem to be involved in this, and there seems to be a lot of corroboration for the things that, so I feel a little bit better about that. There is, in this good world, a presence who shows up every now and then, and maybe I've seen the Chronicles of Narnia once to water, but he seems like sort of a lion-esque kind of figure who is rather glowing and meets with a large group of people of various species from other, if you want to say other worlds, whatever, who are supposed to have jobs to do during this whole process. And we are supposed to welcome as many of the high people as we can into the good world through whatever portals Ben and people like him can create. There are things you can't make up about this world. I noticed that because gravity has a different nature, and there are a number of current residents, humans, I suppose, and others, who at night will literally rise into the sky, which has spiral clouds, and flashes of light will occur. And I asked somebody, what is this? They're helping ancestors and loved ones and people in other worlds who need help, or total strangers, or they're being guardians. This is a place of guardians. It's a place of great strength, and it's a place where, as my friend in the attic there told me, the eaters or feeders cannot come. And again, you know, if you told me even a year ago that I'd be talking about this, I would have told you were nuts. But I spent 40 years building up integrity and honesty as a reputation, as a profession, and certainly as a professional journalist, I've tried to do that. This is so far away from stuff I want to talk about. I didn't ask for this, you know. But I am so certain this is correct, and that this is what Ben is being prepared for.
Is this what the Book of Revelation would talk about, the apocalypse?
I brought that up a while ago, actually. Like, I was just like, oh, it sounds like rapture.
Yeah.
And my dad was like, oh, well, yeah, that kind of makes sense. I mean, but it's not going to be like hell. Well, I don't know.
I don't know. Ben, you have a different perspective on this. You talk to other people in other places far more than I do about this. But we're on the same page when it comes to some danger like this coming and having to get people out.
Well, in all honesty, I don't really talk to other people in other places about this. Well, I do, but not like everybody I meet when I meditate. No, it's just sort of like different people, and I just sort of do what I need to do and then get out. I don't try and see what's going to go on in the future, but...
You don't think about it the way I do, and I probably should. So I envy you that. You just do what has
to be done. But maybe he should.
Yeah, exactly. Because, as I say, I don't think I'm going to be here for most of this, and I think Ben agrees with that, whether I hopefully will be pulling from the other end, helping out. That seems to be what you do in the good world. But again, I've surrendered to this. I mean, all my life I've been scholarly and intellectual and tried to put reasons on things, and now I've done enough of that. I mean, as I say, all science and all theology ends in silence, and I stand there in silence and in awe, trying to do the job that I believe has
What's
done.
The timetable?
I have no other answers. I've come to the end of the book of answers.
What do you think the timetable is?
Yeah, the timetable, we're looking at 2012 to 2016. It's probably already started. You know, people are frogs in the cold water. You know, you heat up the cold water and the frog, you know, doesn't notice and stands there and boils to death. And that's what I think most people are doing. If this all happened at once, everybody would notice it. But it's happening gradually. Whether you want to say, you know, the government's getting more oppressive or whatever, or rebellions around the world, or earthquakes and tsunamis, all this stuff seems to be part of this time of change. And our job is one thing, and that's to get people out.
What do you mean by get them out?
Get them out of here and get them into the good world. Body and all, literally, through portals. That's how I see it.
Can we do it?
Why not? I mean, the multiverse and its uses and its presence should be obvious to all of us.
You sound like the group that's talking about being taken.
Well, the first thing, you know, I just started to come together in my mind, and the first thing I said, oh, my gosh, people are going to think we're like these Heaven's Gate nut jobs, you know, and all this stuff, but that's really not
what it is. No, we are not preaching being a cult.
Absolutely not. No. We're just doing what we feel we're being directed by good, noble, and honest friends and neighbors.
You're not taking your tennis shoes off, putting them by your bed, and doing yourself in, right?
That's
what the Heaven's Gate people did.
This is about life, not about death. It's about preserving life. It's about all things that are good, holy, right, and true that may perish in this particular reality.
And these portals are by these triangle points?
Triangles seem to have a lot to do with it. I don't know, Ben may have another insight in that, but every time we turn around, we're running into triangles. When we attempted to move portals out of this house that was at as I described, at one point of this geographical triangle, we were just trying to help the people get their house back, in a sense, because they were just kind of sick of this paranormal chaos going on around them all the time. And we really needed three people to make a triangle in order to, Ben told me, in order to make the portal move. And who do you think shows up? But I mean, and Ben pointed this out to me. There is a particular race. We call them the clerics.
The clerics.
They are very, very tall. They are very gentle, and they're humanoid. And one of them literally sat down next to us. I could feel his hand in my hand, and I guess he held Ben's other hand. I don't know if you felt his hand or not, but the three of us, moved the triangle because he considered it one of his jobs to help protect this family. And he was from a parallel world, and we believe we may have had contact with the species before, but they are very good, and he helped us out. And we did it twice.
Paul, I've never heard you this way out before.
No. I've never been. We decided we would use your show to go as far as we think we've gone. As I say, this is not me. This is not the usual me. And people have never heard. We don't even talk about this on our own show.
No, you've been a ghost investigator, for crying out loud.
Yeah, pretty much. And yeah, we talked about the multiverse and all this, and the spirituality and the meanings and the Bible and all this. But we've never gone.
So
this far out. But
give me a quick review between this period of 2012, 2016. What do you specifically expect to happen?
Well, we know our own jobs, and that's what we're concentrating on. But me, I'm the thinker. I'm supposed to be the spokesman for the two of us. I think what's going to happen is that we're going to see situations deteriorate, economies, human relationships on every level. I hate to say this. I would like to think with others that the 2012 thing, and I'm not associating this with the Mayan thing, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I'd like to think this is a change of consciousness to a more positive world than we're used to. I would be the first one who would love to say that, but it just doesn't appear that it's going to be that way. I think we're going to see just everything that's bad now, I think, is going to essentially get worse. There may be shining lights here and there. But I think by the time we get to 2015, we're going to – and, one thing that's really true, and I spent a lot of time in the military, and we were very concerned about the proliferation of nuclear weapons.
Right.
And, of course, many years later, the Soviet Union fell apart, and there were over 1,000 unaccounted-for nuclear weapons in the world. I mean, where did they go? Who's got them? I think that might be a problem.
And why?
And I think we're going to see, sooner or later, somebody's going to use one. And I think, of course, the parasites, we've talked about this on other shows, they feed upon this negativity. Imagine the sustenance they get on a battlefield or during terrible natural disasters or in the wake of a nuclear war. How much feeding can they do on carrion like that? It's just horrible to contemplate.
Oh, let's put it in perspective. Like, put it like Nazi Germany. Like, imagine how much food they could get out of the Holocaust.
Yeah. I mean, who inspired somebody like Hitler or Stalin? I mean, I don't just blame, the Thule Society or some group of people like that. I think the influence of parasites on people like that is real, and it's a clear and present danger, as they say. And I think that's all going to escalate as we approach 2016. I think 2016 is going to be the time when this happens. I hope we're wrong. I almost hope we're crazy, because I don't want to see this happen. And how many times in history have people predicted things like this, and, of course, nothing happened, at least not in our reality? I suppose it's possible that we're seeing things that are happening in another version of this world, in a parallel world, but I just don't think so.
But these are based on things you've been told. Right.
These are things that, based on what we've been told and also circumstantial evidence from other things we've been told. And these meetings in the good world, as I call it, seem to be entirely about this. I wish I could remember exactly what is said, but this figure of light, this lionine figure, lionesque figure, who is known, by the way, as the Emperor. I can't explain any of this, but he shows up every few months, and we have these long meetings about what we're going to do and what people's jobs are in this transition. There was great concern among our neighbors, as it were, in parallel worlds, that people serve. We have something, at least the high people, as you want to call them, have something that needs to be preserved. I still can't explain it. I just know that we're supposed to do it.
And Ben, you agree with all this? You've been told you see the same thing?
On what's going to happen from my dad. Like it's, I do agree that it's not going to be some touchy feely, like, oh yeah, everyone's going to become awesome, we can all fly and all that kind of thing. It's not going to be like Barney or Sesame Street. It's going to be like, well, it's basically going to, well, not turn into hell. That's not a good word, but just picture it like a giant war zone. That's basically what's going to happen in the next 4 years.
Does that bother you?
I'm sorry, what?
Does that bother you?
Well, no, not really.
You don't seem upset about it.
No.
Why not?
Well, it's because I'm very confident in my abilities.
Well, yeah, but you're telling us that, you know, things could collapse. It could be the end of the world. And you're not bothered by it? Why not?
Well, I'm actually quite the opposite. I am extremely excited. That may sound extremely weird coming from a kid who's like 19.
Yes.
And has a lot going for him.
Yes.
But
I would agree.
No, it's more like I'm kind of like sick of the normal everyday thing. Like, I don't like daily life. You can even ask any of my friends, my girlfriend, which she hates that I don't like anything having to do with daily life. I can't, like, all my teachers in senior year couldn't picture me doing a normal desk job. I mean, I'm basically bred to do this.
Yeah, but so you're excited about the prospects of a nuclear war? Paul, help me out here.
I don't really know. I just sort of am.
Paul, where are you?
I'm here. I'm sorry. I can't hear you very well. Sorry, what was your question?
Well, he Ben's not upset about this. The prospects of a nuclear war? I'd be depressed.
I'm upset. I'm not depressed because I think I know the outcome. In the end, one of my favorite sayings is from St. Julian of Norwich, a little-known English saint, who said, in the end, all will be well. When you have the multiverse perspective, you really get the impression that in the end, you know, the dominant reality in the multiverse is a good one. Most beings are good and are helpful, and in the end, they will pull through. And you have to, it's bigger than just this world or this planet or whatever, and nuclear war is horrible. Lots of people are going to die, I'm afraid. I hate to even think that, but it is what it is, and being depressed isn't going to help. You take action.
You learn all you can, and you take action.
And I think that's what we're doing. And I'm, you know, Ben is very, very laid back, as you know, and I just, I'm comfortable with the way he is. We're different. I'm upset. But at the same time, I'm comforted because I know in the end, all will be well. That's the best way I can explain it.
I mean, I'd be upset about my grandchildren and, God, their children one day.
Well, that's true. I don't know if there will be anyone left. I don't have any grandchildren now.
Then I'd be really upset.
No, I know. but they'll be left in the good world and in plenty of other worlds.
So you claim that how many people will go through this portal and leave?
I have no idea.
We're not like Jehovah's Witnesses that have a set number of like people that are going to survive.
Yeah, we just don't know. All we know is that we're supposed to concentrate on helping as many as possible.
And how did we start this trek?
Well, that's why we're on the radio, I think. I mean, weird things fell into place to get us on the air. You know, we're with you tonight. And I think that we're sort of getting a message out that people, you see, you know, I'll tell you what, George.
Well, hold on, Paul, because we're at the top of the hour already. So let's get some more statements from you and find out what you feel about this. We'll be back.